Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Elves, joined from a safe distance by my pal Brian Svensson.
Hello!
And over in the bullpen, we've got Chris Suit.
Hello, people.
We are back with our baseball rewatch series, but before we get to that, I'm going to cue up Brian, who texted me earlier this week about some on-field adjacent news in the world of Major League Baseball.
Oh, I'm so excited to talk about this, especially now that Chris Zook is in the house. So the Washington Nationals released what their World Series rings are going to look like, as well as some of the meaning behind it. Yeah. And the first thing I want to get to is, one, they put Baby Shark on the inside of the ring holding the World Series trophy, which is incredible. And two, and I know this is going to rile Zook up, but they put 108 diamonds in the ring. And when they did that, they said, they specifically mentioned what each one of the diamonds is for. 105 of them are for their wins, both regular season and playoffs. Yep. There's an extra one in there for the World Series trophy itself. And there are two diamonds to mark the duality of franchise history.
Oh, God.
What do you think of that, Suk?
Well, unless they're sending me a ring in the mail there, I could not care less about that. I mean, I'll say this. I know you texted me earlier about this, and I will say, sure. I mean, if it's the Cheaters and Astros to the Nationals, I guess, you know, the lesser two evils. But, I mean, you know, I mean, am I wrong here? I mean, they've sort of done the Expos a little in the last little bit and stuff. I don't know. I hate it, right? It's like cheering the Coyotes if you're a Jets fan. I mean, that just – I can't do it.
The second I saw this, I'm like, this is a low blow to the entire city of Montreal and everybody who is ever an Expos fan. Putting it in there saying that is a duality – of franchise history is like, come on.
Well, unless
come on.
Literally, you're going to say it's the Washington Nationals / Montreal Expos, and you're not doing that. I mean, it's no different. I still always feel the worst ever in pro sports was the year after the Nordiques left Quebec, and then Colorado Avalanche won the Stanley Cup. Because that is like, at least the Nationals took about, you know, 15-some years to win it after they left Montreal, but even still, the duality thing, just you know, you want it, own it.
Yeah, right.
The Montreal Expos will win it on their own if they ever get a franchise back. We'll get
right from the Jostens website. The top of the ring features the team's iconic W logo made from 30 custom cut genuine rubies representing the 30 runs
the Russian oligarchs.
Yeah. Representing the 30 runs the team scored in the 4 World Series game in which they were victorious. Surrounding the logo are 58 pave set diamonds. Above and below the logo are the world's world champions. Set over the ring's 32 custom-cut sapphires. The number represents the sum total of the team's walk-off wins, 7, shutout wins, 13, longest winning streak, 8 games, playoff rounds won, 4. An additional 108 diamonds are featured along the ring top, representing the number of regular season and postseason wins, 105, plus 1 diamond for the World Series championship, and an additional 2 diamonds as a nod to the duality of the franchise history of the Montreal Expos and Washington Nationals, right there on the Jostens website. I needed to get that out of the way.
It's so ridiculous, because then, I mean, I know it doesn't really count, but why not put another one for the Washington Senators while you're at it? Like, every team that played in Washington. I mean, it's so ridiculous.
Oh, right? I agree. I think it's a complete low blow. I just wanted to tee you up for it. It's super funny.
If you wanted to get me riled, you got me going today. I'll tell you this much. Anyway, at the end of the day, I mean, congratulations. You know, whatever. Maybe the, you know, I don't know when they're going to do their ceremony, because I guess whenever baseball gets back and they'll
It's not coming back.
But
it's not. We're not getting baseball this year. Well, there's no way. No, because the owners want. The owners have said multiple times that they want a salary cap going forward, and they want revenue sharing, and that's the players are never going to agree to that.
No, I understand that, but I mean, if the NHL are trying to do 24 game playoff season, somewhere in here, I mean, cooler heads will have to prevail one day, or I guess we'll have 1994 again, and they'll just waste another year.
I think they're gonna waste another year, dude. I'm pessimistic about the playing of this baseball season.
I'll give you this. I mean, we have always championed. We'll get to the movie in a second, but we've always championed the players first.
Yeah.
I mean, the players. I mean, this is ridiculous. In the middle of a pandemic, these guys are gonna try and get their salary cap once and for all, right? I mean, and they think the public's gonna side with them because people want the sport. Course, but I hope, for the sake of the game, and I know I'm being very optimistic here, is that if you know it's healthy enough to do it, it's somewhere in here they'll figure this out. But I mean, you're right, Brian. I mean, if it stays the way it is right now, I can't see the players' union agreeing to that at all.
Nope. I think we're gonna miss. I don't think we're just gonna miss this year. I think we're gonna miss next year too, because.
That's when it was supposed to come up, right?
They're gonna get locked out. The players are gonna get locked out because the collective bar, the CBA runs out, right? So the players are gonna say, no, we're not taking a salary cap, and the owners are gonna say, okay, we're not gonna play next year either. We're gonna miss 2 years of baseball.
Well, okay, slow down for a second. We've already missed 2 months. But the one thing that's interesting too, I'll never understand how in any of the four major sports in North America, how we always agree with the billionaires instead of the millionaires. I know it's
preach to the choir, Zook.
I know it's ridiculous considering what we're going through right now. So this is all really kind of silly if you think about it in the bigger scope. But I mean, at the end of the day, like the Angels, what did they just furlough their whole staff? And the guy is a multi-billionaire guy who owns the Angels. It's ridiculous, right? But
You
got to save a dollar because we got to save a dollar, right?
So the A's aren't paying their minor league players at all, and their owner is worth $2.1 billion, and it's stupid. He could afford to pay every single one of his minor league players $400 a week for the next decade and still be worth $2 billion.
Is that the new money ball?
It's called disaster capitalism. That's what it is.
Let's get on to something.
So, weirdly enough, this movie was released in 1994, which is a
nice segue.
Sore very spot for all of us. And if we – I will reiterate, read Lords of the Realm, the book that does include some backroom stuff about 94. We're going to talk about Little Big League. We did not get another Twins fan on, but I did wear my Gary Gaetti cap.
Michael, you could take you're the Twins fan this week. Right?
I'll take the lead on this. So this 1994 film, it's a Warner family film, and it's actually not like as little kid as Rookie of the Year. I think this is treated kind of seriously.
Yeah.
It's actually not as bad. I mean, from a rewatch level, I was quite surprised that. Because some of the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes was not very kind to this movie, but it's a baseball movie. It's actually, I thought it was fine.
Yeah, I think it's really good.
And Roger Ebert loved it too. Siskel and Ebert gave it 2 thumbs up on the DVD copy that I own. And then I went and looked at Ebert's review online in his archives, and he compared it favorably to Bull Durham and Field of Dreams, and that it, you know, uses baseball as kind of like an allegorical story and in an appropriate way, and isn't just a backdrop for antics the way Major League 2, which he references in the review, did. That one certainly didn't earn his love. So, I mean, we can start right at the beginning, because it opens with the central character, Billy Haywood, playing in Little League.
Can I just say something before we go into this? I did research. So in the movie, the main character is supposed to be 12 years old. If they, depending sort of how, when the production was on this movie, the actual actor was either 12 or 13 years old. So it's almost bang on.
Yeah, no, he's a little kid. He definitely comes across as a little kid. What I wanted to note, though, because I'm taking notes on my phone here as I'm watching the film. The ump calls play ball, but as the game starts, the bases are already loaded. I don't know if anyone caught that.
That was a Metrodome tradition. Don't you remember that? That's how they won the two World Series. They already have been on best.
This is the Little League game, though. The
Little League game. Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then there's this, like, runner on the base thing where all three kids end up at the same base.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And then the ump defers to Billy, who then references a situation with the 26 Dodgers in a situation like that to rule that the lead runner was the only one who was safe.
Good luck knowing that without baseball reference, kid.
I mean, they make this kid out to be like preternaturally smart, but I mean, his father has passed away, and he's got his grandfather who owns the Twins and clearly has like taken a like fatherly role in his life, and they share a love of baseball. So, I mean, it sets that up in a very short order, but it also gives this kid credence that he like knows about the game beyond, you know, playing Little League.
He's wise beyond his years.
So that when he does eventually make the decision, when he inherits the team, to take over as manager, that it's not like completely out of nowhere. And I think like they do lay some interesting track to like at least make it somewhat plausible.
Right, yeah, they have the banter before the his grandfather passes away about they have the baseball trivia and that he goes to the games and stuff. And yeah, I thought it was set up pretty well about that. I mean, the interesting thing is Jason Robards, I think, is the grandfather. Right?
Jason Robards is the grandfather, and he like. If anyone listens to the Rewatchables podcast, they talk about the Dion Waiters Award, like the person who like comes in and shoots like lights out for like 3 minutes in a game.
Right.
Jason Robards wins the Dion Waiters of Little Big League.
Definitely.
You know what's crazy? I looked this one up. I knew he was pretty accomplished. The guy won a Tony, an Emmy, and 2 Oscars.
Yes.
So, you know, he brought some weight to this.
The only thing he didn't get was the Grammy. If he'd be an EGOT.
It would have been an EGOT.
But in 2 minutes in the scene when they go for ice cream after the game, he basically wins the EGOT of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because he makes the dig about eating ice cream when you're young because you, like, life gets crappy when you're older. He gives the little kids gears about being front runners when they say they don't want to go to the game. And then he says he pisses on Jed Clampett.
Yes, yeah. He was throwing 112 right out of the gate.
You know, Roberts knew he was only there for like, you know, a couple of scenes, right? So you got to give the high fast ones right away, right?
Leave it all out on the field.
It was excellent. Great stuff.
Leaves it all out there. Incredible.
Someone else who kind of gave it all very briefly was Dennis Farina as the initial manager.
I'm going to just say this right. I got to stop here. You know, he has a soft spot in my heart because not only this movie, I did not know. I don't remember. I think it's John Ashton.
So he plays the bench coach, right. John Ashton. So
those two actors are in probably in the top 5 favorite movies of all time, Midnight Run.
Okay.
Right.
I remember him mostly from Snatch as Cousin Avi.
Sure. He was always the heavy, right? He was a villain. He played, you know, the Italian villain sometimes or whatever. He was a villain. But in Midnight Run, if people haven't seen this movie and you're still quarantined, you're looking for something you need to spend 2 hours.
Yeah, Midnight Run's
been years since I watched that, so I'm going to have to
watch that again. But these two, because Farina, again, you're right. He's only in there very shortly at the start of the movie, but he hits it out of the park.
I will knock him points though, that because he does fat shame John Ashton.
Yeah.
You're right. And I will say again, yes, there is some 90s references that don't, but not as bad as like Major League or something like that. Like this is
no, because it is a children's film, so it's not. Although there were two. So the one is the when he becomes the manager and goes on the road, he orders a Skinamax movie multiple times, which becomes a plot point because it's like he gets caught his mom with the, you know, the bill later on or whatever. But they like briefly show a scene essentially. Yep. And it's like, whoa. Cause I watched this with my like 9 and 6 year old.
You gotta reach out to cover both.
How do I explain why they're doing this?
Yeah.
And then Billy does drop the R word with his friends when they're discussing whether Batman Batman would ever go to McDonald's.
That doesn't fly. That doesn't fly.
Like, ooh, that is a
touchy.
That's one you can't go with. Yeah. So
but things that have aged poorly, things that have aged incredibly. How about the Hubie? Metronome never looking better.
Can I just say, of all the locker rooms we've seen, this great is the best locker room.
Great locker room at the Hubie.
And you know what the one great thing about this movie is? That is, those scenes are in the Metrodome, right?
Yeah, no, they're in the Hubie.
It's all filmed on location.
It's all there. And you know what I really like? Somehow Major League Baseball signed off on this movie, obviously, because the cameos of all the Major League Baseball players, especially at the end.
I've got the list.
Phenomenal.
I've got the list. Here's a list of every single person in here who is either a Major League Baseball player or a Major League manager. Ken Griffey Jr., Lou Piniella, Mickey Tettleton, Pudge Rodriguez, Sandy Alomar Jr., Eric Anthony, Carlos Berga, Alex Fernandez, Randy Johnson, Wally Joyner, Dave Magadan, Lenny Webster, Paul O'Neill, Rafael Palmeiro, Dean Palmer, and Tim Raines. And Chris Berman was in it as well.
Yes.
Did you not say Ken Griffey Jr. as well?
Yeah.
He did. That was one of the first ones.
Right at the top. Yeah.
No, no. And actually, I think there's one of the twins also. Bull Durham. What's his? Leon Durham is on the Twins. He was a former player as well.
Okay.
So it's but it's great too because it's got like they go to Yankee, like they have scenes like I don't know they didn't really film.
Went to Comiskey. Like,
yeah.
Because there's a shot of him in the like one of the owner's boxes eating at Comiskey. There's they go to Fenway. He's sitting in the dugout. Although he's like, sleeping it off.
And not only like are there so many major leaguers, but they all play their parts really well. Like Griffey is legitimately entertaining.
Yes,
I mean, not that we knew he was going to be, but he's legitimately really entertaining. Piniella is a good sport and is really great. And oh my God, how scary is the big unit walking in from the bullpen?
You
know,
funny you say that because Lee J was like, I said, well, that's a real baseball player we're watching the movie. And she goes, oh, he's really scary looking. I'm like, yeah, that's the dude.
Yes.
That's the big unit. That's where he killed a seagull. This guy is ferocious. He's dangerous.
He's a photographer now. You pay the big unit to take your wedding photos.
Oh, my God. But, I mean, it was crazy. I mean, they set it up very well for the finish, right? I mean, we're not going to give away too many secrets here in the movie. People want to see it, but. I thought they did a good job of sort of doing the ups and downs of the season, right? And then the kid gets a little serious, and they go back to having fun. And, yeah, you know, I mean, and actually, you know, what's cool is, Michael, did you – I tried to research this. I could not for the darndest figure this out. Any idea why they picked the Twins as the focal point team for this movie? Does anyone know?
I didn't find anything. I was hoping there'd be like some sort of like oral history or some sort of like background. And unfortunately the DVD, the special features on this one failed me. There was no like making of or like audio commentary. It was pretty thin.
But it's just, you know, because, you know, we've gone through this and, you know, the Yankees and the Cubs and Red Sox or whatever. Right. But why the, like, I mean, it's great because I think, you know, the Metrodome was a great backdrop, and the Twinkies, you know, when they film it, they've won two titles in the last, you know, 6 years, pretty much 87, 91, right?
Right. So, this is set in 94 and yeah, like it's like 3 years removed from them having won. So like this kid would have been a fan through the like salad days.
That's right.
Of the World Series.
Because that might be sort of the one of those, maybe that dig, right, that Robarts does at the start, you know, fair weather fan, right? Because the Twinkies are actually not doing as well as when they won a title. If they were doing it, you know, in the chronological order. I just thought there were just some nice little moments there about that. And I just thought the baseball, like, aspect of it, it wasn't just throwaway. It was actually, you know, moved the story a bit. And, yeah.
I kind of wondered if setting it there, like, just kind of like the kind of more, like, smaller market, like they could make this somewhat plausible, right? Like he's not going to become the Yankee skipper or something, right? Like,
yeah, it's Midwest, it's Minnesota, stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, who is it? It's Timothy Busfield, is that right?
Yeah, he's Lou, the veteran first baseman who is interested in Billy's mom, and it's interesting because, of course, this is like the Gary Busey part in Rookie of the Year, right? Like,
yes.
Yeah, I don't know why they sort of need to have, and we're getting ahead of next week already, but the love story in baseball movies sometimes, you know, I would say it's getting a little bit of the weaker part of this movie.
What it does, the one thing it gives this one that, like, you didn't necessarily need in Rookie of the Year or the one we'll get into next week is, Billy makes the decision to bench Lou.
Yes.
And so the friction there and like the managerial decision, like, I think he does something out of emotion rather than like, you know, for the good of the team. And, right, yeah. And so that creates kind of an interesting power play there. The one thing I will say that I noticed, so did Billy invent the shift?
I think so.
Because this is a 1994 like movie, and the first instance that I could find of the defensive shift was in 06. The Rays adopted it. But he keeps motioning Lou to move sideways, 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 and then the ball comes straight to him.
I think he invented the shift. It's certainly
just like the Mighty Ducks invented the flying V, right? Like, so that, yes, I think.
Well, I mean, one's useful, one would get killed in a game. You can't use
the... No doubt.
The other thing that they invent in this...
You would just not score a lot of goals.
The other thing they invent in this, also involving Lou, is Timothy Busfield actually says, "Say hi to your mother for me."
Yeah, great. Fantastic. They might invent the fake pickoff play, though, too, the phantom pickoff play. Not the guy throwing the ball back, but, like, legitimately faking that the ball went into the outfield. I'd never...
Right, where they get the security guard in on it.
In
and
on
like
it.
Moves
yeah.
the chair like it went past him and like, yeah. It's
now, the only thing is Griffey's not running very hard because he kind of slows up at second to get tagged out.
Well, because I think he knows that he's going to get caught, but I think he know like he's like, I'm not going to be able to take third, right?
Oh, okay.
So I think he realizes that he doesn't need to run super hard to get second, but I think he thinks he can't get to third, so...
Oh, I just got handed this by Lee J. She's a math teacher. So there's that equation they're trying to figure about painting the house.
One and seven eighths.
Together and divide, right?
One and seven eighths, exactly.
Is that actually the correct answer?
That is the correct answer, yes. So they have this faction.
That's some high level algebra for a 12-year-old kid. Mike, you've got a kid that's getting pretty close. Are they learning this? They're learning anything like that?
No, although they like new math is very different. I've found like the math that they're doing in school, they're using like
they're probably
stuff that I don't know.
I don't know what they're doing right now. Who knows, really? Let's be honest, Michael. God bless all the parents out there. I have no idea what kids are doing right now.
But yeah, so like,
well, I know what my kids are doing, but yeah.
I knew that formula, when they pose the problem, I'm like, oh, well, this is what you have to do. But I'm like, and then I was thinking, I was like, I don't think I learned that until I was in high school.
So, you know what, the one thing I like about this movie too, as weird as it sounds, they're going to be truthful, is that they don't win, right? Like the end, like, you know, it's actually a legit thing. You know, he comes up, you think it's going to be the natural or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen, right? And no offense, Michael, the Twinkies don't win this time, but they won two. So
they're fresh off of two World Series wins.
You see right there in the old Glad bag, right? You know, and you know what I liked about it was that it was legitimate. Is they actually made it as a playoff, right? So they just
it was a game 163.
Yeah.
And we've had like a couple of those.
I've actually seen one in that dome, and it's fantastic. And the weird thing about that,
I miss the Hubie.
I do. And in 94, right? So that's before that might have been right. Is that the first year for the wild card? Because it says in the movie that was for the wild card.
I think that was
one of the first years.
It could have been.
Like, it was in the early 90s. I can't remember exactly, but it was just an interesting thing. Again, they didn't win the division. This was for the wild card, and they don't win, but it was 12th inning and stuff like that. So, again, little touches there. Someone who knows what they were doing,
Yeah. There was a lot of baseball knowledge. There was a lot of baseball knowledge put into this, and it was done with love and care and by someone who was clearly a fan. It was a good movie. I really enjoyed the movie. It was great.
I did.
I really do miss the Hubie.
I enjoyed that they said, Whitey Herzog and Bobby Valentine turned them down for the replacement skipper. Like that, those were like legit. Those would have been actual candidates at the time. But then his friends say, "It's the AL. How hard could it be? You've got the DH."
Oh God.
But also, if you go, and then the one just before that, they were trying to get Ricky Henderson. He was a free agent, right? And he was,
yeah.
I wrote down the specifics of his deal, that he wanted 3 years, $18 million, a house, a golf membership, a dog, and a Ferrari Testarossa.
And I don't think you could – I don't think that's legal. I don't think that was legal in the CBA at the time. I don't think you could give a guy a house as part of it.
We don't know all the inners. There have to be the last dance of the baseball in the 90s, right? That might have happened on the back end.
Speaking of the last dance, the grandfather tapes his adjunct to his will on over top of a Knicks-Bulls playoff game.
Yeah.
I was like, geez, George.
That was like the 93 playoffs.
Yeah. That was the Smith Gets Stuffed one, right?
Yeah.
Unreal.
So weirdly serendipitous to come up with that, to rewatch this movie now, hot on the heels of The Last Dance, and the fact that like those games mattered again.
Yeah, wild. Super funny though. I heard a really funny Ricky Henderson story about recently, where he was still an old guy and he was on the bus, with a younger team, and they were all talking. It was at the end of his career. I think he was with the Dodgers. And they were all talking, reminiscing about different things. And the young kids were like, I was in grade school when Joe Carter hit the home run or whatever, right? Like, where were you? Where were you? And then like a voice from the front of the bus comes like, yeah, I was on second base. It was just Ricky.
Right. Ricky. Yes, yes, yes. So the interesting thing, Michael, if we're doing a 94, the Blue Jays would have been back-to-back champion into that year of the movie.
Yeah.
And then 90, no one won because it would have been the Montreal Expos, but we'll never know.
Right. Also, one thing we'll never know is why the kid has a San Francisco 49ers pennant in his bedroom. I don't know if you caught this, but...
Who really wants to be a fan of the Vikings anyways?
Well, he also has a Vikings pennant. Because I actually paused the thing to look in his back. What's that?
He has a New York Jets pennant.
Yeah, different conference, though. That's fine. That's not a party foul. But having two NFC pennants, that's a little fuzzy.
That's a set decorator no-no, I feel like. That one.
Yeah.
Also a no-no, or one thing that hasn't aged well, was just how casual the bullying of that Lowell kid is.
Oh, my God.
They're like replacement friend.
Yeah, they're sitting on him and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean... Yeah, time to change.
I guess everybody.
I will say though, calling someone numbnuts, still a pretty good burn.
Still a funny burn. I still like that one. That was such a big burn when I was a kid, and I was a kid right around this time, like when I was in grades 4, 5, and 6. Like that numbnuts was like still a really huge burn, and to see it make it like to watch it and be like, oh, that's probably where it came from.
Who knew this movie was such a groundbreaker?
No kidding.
This is the thing. I had no idea that Say Hi to Your Mother for Me, the defensive shift, like all these things.
The Phantom pick play and then Numb Nuts. Just incredible. This movie.
What a legacy.
written by Nostradamus.
Wait, how about the end of the movie? Right, and how about the end of the movie where it's a freeze frame at the end. He raises his cap, and that's how the movie ends.
I think there were freeze frames before that, though.
No, I know that. I'm not saying they revolutionized. I'm just saying that was a classic.
It's a good end. It's a good end.
It is a good ending. Yeah, and I appreciate that they don't win.
Yeah.
I mean, much as I love seeing the Twins win, like going against the grain with a sports movie and having them, you know, not quite do it.
I'll say this. If there ever was an Expos movie, they're winning that one 100%. Because that's the only time in my lifetime they might win. So I'm just going to lay that out. But the Twins had already won two in real life. That's all right. It's all good.
Yeah. No, my thumbs are up for this movie, especially on rewatch. It's been a while. I mean, when this came out, the summer it came out, I was a little old for like a kid's movie, so I didn't watch it immediately. I kind of came to it a little later.
You would have been in Japan around this time, right?
I was living in Japan. I moved to Japan that summer, so that's why I missed this movie when it first came out. I was living the Mr. Baseball life, which at some point I would love for us to rewatch.
Sure. Yes,
that would be good. I will say this real quick here, too. Remember, this is early 90s, so there isn't much, I don't think there's any CGI in this movie. Like, that's real people in that crowd. Like, somewhere in there, they have to get, I don't know how they did it, but they must have said, hey, after a ball game or something, because they're playing on the Metrodome. That's 50,000 people in that stadium, it looks like. Like, unless maybe they have some movie magic there, but it looked pretty real to me.
Well, I mean, you probably could, and there's not really a lot of like backroom trivia on this, but for something like that, you could just film, and right. Splice the film over each other, right? So you could have like 10,000 extras and film in a slice and just keep filming.
It looks incredible.
Like,
because it's not like Major League where, you know, they sort of had a replacement. Like that's the Metrodome, right? We all know they had great teams of people going into the Metrodome for that final game and stuff.
And I just immediately had memories of like going through the spinning doors and your ears
and
popping.
The suction though. I know. I was kind of I held out hope that we might get a scene of someone, like, because they show people in the like outside the dome, and yep. Then they show someone coming down the steps from the concourse. And yep. I was like, I want that Inbertine thing where you get the suction of like coming into the actual dome.
And then you got to unpop your ears.
I actually thought they were going to do a scene. I think there was one where someone gets a pop-up and I thought it was going to hit the roof.
Oh.
Because that would have been classic Metrodome, right? Because they had that rule. If it hit the roof.
Ground rule double, wasn't it?
The ground rule, it's the same as in Tampa Bay. I think they still have the Tropicana or whatever.
Same rule. It's yeah. The same rule at the Trop.
Yeah, but the Trop is actually much lower, I think.
Yeah, and it's got that stupid gangplank that can block home runs.
Yeah,
I hate the Trop.
Hey, again, I would love them for tomorrow to disband so we can get that.
Send them to Montreal. I don't know. I have so many fond memories of the Hubie, as I'm sure you guys do. I went on a band trip in grade 9. We went to Minneapolis and we went and saw the Twins play the White Sox. It was right after AJ Pierzynski ended up being on the White Sox after with the Twins, and he was getting booed like a son of a gun. And I remember sitting there, and we sat in right field over top of the seats.
Perfect.
Over the baggie and like the cliff seats. Fantastic. And we sat there and I was in the front row and I was keeping score and my teachers kept being like, Brian, you have to go eat food. I'm like, no, I'm not leaving. I want to watch this. I'm not going anywhere. And I remember the Twins won. It was fun.
Let me tell you, I've said this before and I'll say this again. What I love about that, I don't know if they still do it a bit. I think it's more electronic now, but back in the day there, they had this thing called Twingo and it was like bingo.
They still got Twingo.
They still have it, but it's not quite the same because you actually have to get a card. And
yeah,
stuff.
No, it's electronic. It's on your phone now. Yeah,
speaking of electronic, I love the home runs on the animation on the scoreboard.
Yes! Classic 90s. Classic 90s.
Metrodome stuff, like the home run thing and all that. That's all.
It was all legit.
It is.
Good stuff. Well, I think we've all raised our thumbs and tipped our caps to Little Big League. I will plug next week. We will have Dale Jacobs. He's been on the show before to talk about some books he's written, but he's going to join us. He's a Detroit Tigers lifelong fan, and he's going to talk For the Love of the Game, which is why Chris Zook was plugging the issues about romance movies. And we will definitely get into that. Stick around for Front Burner, and thanks for tuning in to Ben Shuckey's here on 101.5 UMFM.
Strike three, you're out.